Gail got born in Little Larry on the 26th year, about a couple of miles.
Born with it?
Didn't you get born in Little Larry about the 26th year in the first?
No, it wasn't.
You got bored with that physical ailment.
Right? Yeah.
But after your 26th year, when you got failed and really got cancer, to really be deep thinking.
I have stayed away from this book for a while. It's like letting your acreage lie fallow.
Let it
feed. That's right. Then I come back to it. Yes, too much of this is like too much of anything. I've let this sit for a couple of years ago. I don't anymore now because we have the book and I'm perambulating around. It's beautiful.
Oh,
it's so close to
you. I know it's so many dogs.
No, it's
too weird. These dogs. Oh, that's what I'm
saying. It's
a bug. Bug. It feels like it's a dog.
Yeah, after a while you get used to it and you can live with it.
That's my idea.
I would like to ask, I'm not taking issue, but I would like to know your explanation on the word static is used. It's always been one of my pet things, but nothing is static in real life, it's stagnant. And you use the word static in a different way than I've ever had it used before, or ever heard it used before, as being a very living kind of thing. And static, I have said selection to me as far as I can see it. But you couldn't be static, or it was
stagnant. I think your statement is practically correct. I've used this in connection with God, not in connection with anything.
That's
what I
said. That's
the
word. It's a different way than I've ever thought of.
I think that would be true of any creature, or of any sub-absolute being. They couldn't be static. It has to be static.
You
stick to your concept.
That's not.
Yeah, only God could be static and still grow.
Well,
because he is God.
Infinite. He is God. The rules just don't apply there.
Well, that really is stop it for me for a minute.
Here,
we're going along there because
let me show
I
you.
Had just blew everything I saw at all the people.
Well, you know, let me show you something here. You don't realize what you've been going through. Turn the page to you.
Oh, that's where I belong.
Oh, that's what I like.
Yeah.
That's a nice
place
to start.
And look down a little bit to near the bottom of the top third of the page. About paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4. Deity functions on personal, pre-personal, and super-personal levels. Forget that. Total deity is functioning on the following 7 levels. 1, steady. Self-contained and self-existent deity. Now you're not afraid of that anymore, right? 2, potential. Self-willed and self-purposed deity. 3, associated. Self-personalized and divinely fraternal deity.
And I have a little note, but I've never gone back
and... Right. Now this is our whole story of the zero age is an exploration of just those 3 sentences.
I have written down
3 sentences. 3 sentences, that's all it's talking about. Only I want to go back to static in our first prologue because there's something that is bigger than all of this. And I use the term the infinite. And the infinite is revealed to me as God. Right. He's the underlying principle. And this is what we're seeking for. And that's what I'm trying to distill out of this book. The story that's implied in this book, which you can interpolate and extrapolate from what they say, without anything freakish or bizarre, just reasonable reason. It tells me that the quest of quest is the attempt to find this infinite. I'm convinced I never will. I'm also convinced I will never be stopped. These two conclusions I've reached. I never will find the infinite, but nothing will ever stop me in this life.
Please, you've got to understand it.
Yes.
Now, no one will understand it. But I'm going to.
I know where I want to go, whether I ever get there or not. It's really immaterial as long as I don't get stopped in my.
You will never be stopped. You have the equipment. When I analyze, I get laid up for 6 weeks to learn driving. And for 6 weeks, I sat at a typewriter. I found out the perfect way to work was to sleep twice a day and work twice a day. So you're fresh twice instead of once. And, I slept mornings and I slept early evenings. And I worked afternoons and I worked from midnight on.
Quite a thing.
Oh, God, yes. And you finally get to the place where you've moved on in concept to where you can think on in an area. And I analyze what kind of growth is going to take place on the whole natural universe system. This is close ultimate growth, or absolute growth. I analyze the conditions. Then I analyze what kind of equipment the human beings have.
And you in particular, because you were doing it?
No, anybody. Anybody's got
that. Anybody doing this stuff.
Right. And human beings have got two things. They get two priceless possessions. They get them both from God. Number one, your personality. Our personality has got a potential of 7 dimensions, only 3 of which are expressible, as long as we're finite creatures. 3 of them are expressible on the absolute level. That's in between. It's neither absolute nor finite. But the final dimension of human personality is capable of sub-infinite penetration of the absolute level. Now, I analyze that to mean just this. I can never encompass that level, but I can get there and keep on growing. And, of course, when I say sub-infinite, I buy that. I'll never be an infinite being. But nothing is going to stop my growth. The second piece of equipment I got is this priceless fragment of God. And nothing's ever going to stop that. There's a gas tank that's never going to run empty. We can alienate it. Those two things tell me that we have the equipment right now to go the limit. There is nothing that will ever stop it. And the mere fact that the goal is non-attainable doesn't stop it. If you look at the last paragraph in paper 10. A wonderful old character writes this paper. He's a universal sensor, and for some reason or other, I think he's an old Marine Corps colonel. He's been everywhere and seen everything, including DeLorean Truman. Marine Corps colonel. And he's talking about what they're telling the boys in boot training camp, about how far you can go, you know. And starting at the bottom of page 116, he said, it may be possible that the finalities will partially attain the deity absolute. But even if they should, still in the eternity of eternity, the problem of the universal absolute, that's that middle link, will continue to intrigue, mystify, baffle, and challenge the ascending and progressing finalities. For we perceive that the unfathomability of the cosmic relationships of the universal absolute will tend to grow in proportions as the material universes and their spiritual administration continue to expand. In other words, you're trying to encompass something which is growing faster than you're growing. And then, only infinity can disclose the Father in.
That's
like rowing, chasing a motorboat. But doesn't mean you're not making progress. And it also doesn't mean that the gap isn't getting worse all the time. But that's all right. That's all right. We're still making progress. And if we ever came to the end of the road, we would have arrived at the static affair, which is not for creatures.
We cannot be.
This is not for creatures.
That's what I was going to say. Well, if you read, I thought, well, there it is again.
Certainly.
We would become static if we reached that goal and we were material.
Right. When people present a static condition of the goal, then you come to the eschatology of Hinduism, in Buddhism, Southern Buddhism, Nirvana, where you unite with the absolute, or the oversoul, and then you lose individuality. This is the union of a drop of water with the ocean. And from there on out, you can't say what this person is. All you can say is what he isn't.
He's not a person.
He is not a person. He is not not a person. He is not alive. He is not dead. He is not conscious. He is not unconscious. Or to use two Sanskrit words, which I've learned, nitta nata, with not this, not that. So I want to buy something which is, can be described only in terms of negative. This describes something in terms of positive.
Yeah, you might explain some personality
of the person. It's a fourth reality. It's not matter, it's not mind, it's not spirit, but it is real. And I use this illustration, one of the tendencies. No one has ever seen red. Red is a concept, but not a reality. We know red, we perceive red, only when we perceive something which is red. Neither will anyone ever perceive personality as such. We will perceive personality only when we encounter someone who is a person. Personality is pure quality with no quantity whatsoever. Whereas matter, mind, and spirit differ in quality and are also quantitative reality. Example, in paper 12 on the Universe of Universes, when they discuss their computations of gravity, they can compute the quantitative output of material gravity, mind gravity, spirit gravity. But personality gravity is non-computer. Mathematics won't touch it because it's a quantity we deal with, just quantity. Personality is something that God gives to living creatures and which does two things to them. First, it puts them in the personality circuit, which is an independent, direct relationship to God, independent of the object. And second, these creatures are forever liberated from slavish response to antecedent causation. They don't just fall over like dominoes when the next domino hits them, which would be characteristic of a piece of machinery or a subpersonal thing. A creature has choice, not absolute choice, but relative choice. And my favorite illustration is you can't decide not to have wrinkles in your face, but you can choose which kind you want to have, from frowning or from smiling. That is a choosable proposition. I think of choice, real choice, I don't mean trivial choice, shall I, now I have some coffee, that's a choice. No, that's another choice. But these are such casual choices.
They're insignificant choices.
Right. But I think it's significant choices as taking place in human life, in this life. Let's parallel living experience to a railroad system. When I'm on the straightaway, that's about all I can do is get on the straightaway. I don't have any situation. But every so often I pass over a switch. And every time I encounter that switch condition, I do have the possibility of judgment. I can throw that switch in the air. And these are not trivial choices. These are major choices. Now, since I have personality, I have three visions. I don't just have to learn everything by experimentation. Page 193, the first couple of paragraphs there discuss this point. Because because I am a person as well as a conscious being, I have reflective self-consciousness. I'd like to call that second degree consciousness. I not only know, but I am aware of the fact that I know. This is consciousness of consciousness. And one of the byproducts of this, I think, is the ability to forecast, which is why we use a different term for animals and humans. We speak of animal behavior, but human conduct. I can, when I hit this switch, I have got a telescope or binoculars, and I can look down the road a long ways and say, well, where does this road lead to, see? And I don't have to go down the wrong siding necessarily. I can feel out the consequences of action before I take the action, so that I do not actually have to have experience with evil. I can limit this to an experience with potential evil. Jesus had a thoroughgoing experience with potential evil in his life. He had very little experience with actual evil. Very little. But always the potential was there. The stimulus to the choosing of the good was present. Again, page 52. Paragraph 2. Havana natives don't require this. Havana natives, inherently perfect beings, don't require this choice stimulus. But we do. And if we didn't have it, we couldn't see the good and differentiate it by contrast. We are aware of, to use symbolism, of the virtue of light only when we pause to consider the contrasting lack of virtue in black. We think in terms of opposites. We dichotomize in all our thinking. And these are the decisions, I think, that you make that determine progress. Now, if you're sincere, you've got good field glasses. You can look way down the road. If you're insincere, you've got warped lenses in there. You're doing a snow job on yourself. You're conning yourself. You're rationalizing beyond all normal reason. You're justifying your own ego. You are putting your ego at the center of things. And again, page 142, the only paragraph on the page. When you put your ego at the center of the personality system, you disrupt the whole cosmic plane, because the adjuster is supposed to be at the center of that system. You just disrupt that particular human atom, that's all, because you've disrupted the mystery. I think you could have intellectual intrigue, be intellectually intrigued with this book and be spiritually dead. You just comprehend it. Yeah. And a much better intellectual comprehension of Jesus teaching than, say, the obvious thing. But if you ask me to make a book on Judas' survival, I will quote you out that he didn't. That's my opinion. No. And I would make books that the Alpheus twins did. At least Jesus intimated to them that there were going to be a lot of crowds that they'd be working together with in the future. He kept throwing the wrong switch. And one day, he formed a habit And one day he just threw one wrong fist to me. We're told that up there on the mansion world, somewhere along about world number 5, we fuse with our thought of justice. Now this does not mean that we've achieved perfection. Far from it. We have most of the paradise descent ahead of us. But it does mean that as far as this choosing business is concerned, we have made a final choice. We have no reservations left. We have chosen to find God and to attempt to do His will. And that choice has been made with such finality that it is irrevocable. Our purpose has become perfect. Our technique leaves much to be desired, I'm sure. We're awkward, we're bumbling, we say the wrong things, we get demoralized, socialized, and whatnot. We'll never knowingly throw a wrong switch again. We might inadvertently, yes, we make trouble, out of ignorance, but never by design.
And all these things are designed.
Yes. Now, this works the other way, too. There are, I think, to finite creatures, there are some limits of choice. And I think as you start in the middle and you move Godward, eventually you cross the threshold. And that's when the fuse of your adjustment. That recognizes the irrevocability of that last choice. You've really said it. You're never going to change your mind. I think you can start moving in the other direction. And I think in theological and Durantia terms, when you cross the threshold between sin and iniquity, this is the threshold in the opposite direction. You make a final choice against God that results in the final deformation of your character and being. You could never again retrace it. I think you can make a final choice in either direction. Somewhere down the pike, Lucifer made such a choice. Lucifer started out in the middle. Lucifer perpetrated evil, not sin. Lucifer was sincere to start with. At some point down the line, he became insincere. And this happened when he realized that his whole project was ungood. Yes. Prior to that time, he had reason, regardless of the consequences elsewhere, I'm doing the right thing for my system. This is a good measure for the system. We need something new. This is revolutionary. Well, this is how we make progress. But at some point down the line, he became totally disillusioned. This wasn't good for the system or Lucifer or anybody else. He stoutly maintained his position. At that point, evil translated to sin.
No.
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. He never quite forgave Jesus for not getting down out of jail. Well, I think Peter and Andrew felt badly about it at the start, but they got over it because they loved Jesus. There wasn't anything except for the failure to love Jesus. There was no jiggery pokery that was up that some of the others wanted into as well as Judas. But they loved Jesus.
Sure
they were conspiring.
The other,
sure.
The other
when the blue chip went down on the board, when the mud hit the fan, they were for Jesus. Remember how Thomas used to belabor him? Yeah. He'd be an ass and go down there and get knocked off. He used modern parlance. And finally, when Jesus wouldn't budge, Thomas would say, all right, boy, it's crazy. So the least we can do is bow with him.
Go for broke.
Go for broke. Yes, that would be what Thomas said. Now, at some point down the line, Lucifer became disillusioned. He was offered a chance to accept mercy. He spurned it. It says mercy is not to be trampled underfoot. Every time he spurned mercy, he did something to himself. He warped himself a little farther. Why that he retrograde. Or went a little more crazy. And somewhere down the line, he crossed the threshold. Yes. Certainly. Well, they talk about the look of the rebellion. They say this may not sound very much like a war to you. See the debate going on, Gabriel versus Lucifer. So they said this is a much more terrible war than anything you know anything about. You fight wars in terms of life temporal. This war was fought in terms of life eternal. Well, you see, this is not a mawkish universe. This is a universe that is thrillingly adventurous. And you did go for broke, and you did go for peace. And it's a challenge. It's not a soft church luncheon with chocolate cake and cocoa and everybody smiling at each other. That's right. This has got as much challenge in it, infinitely more challenge than a war, or meeting an economic threat, or standing up and being counted in any difficult situation. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought you could get into the outline where it was a matter of Gabriel and Lucifer to be a business.
Sure. And I'm mindful of what Jesus said, where he told the story of the parable of the talents. I thought about that. I thought how lucky I had been to have this book and to get it young. You know, when your mind is pliable and the concepts are easy to take in, I could work with. I didn't have to work with yarn that had been knitted once, you know what I mean? Sure. And to have aptitude to work with it. And then I thought of that parable of the talents, and I said, Buster, you better measure up. There's no royal will, there's no privileges. The more you get, the more you're going to have to account for it. Yes. And my personal reaction is, I'm not a bit scared, but I feel totally challenged. Totally challenged. I just think it's going to take everything I have. Otherwise, well, what?
Well, you ever get that quote,
that
dragon, over it?
No.
I knew it.
That one is just kind of very good. Like this in the middle, and you break out in a sweat, and you take on and hurry.
I tell you what I have gotten, though, and what I want to share with as many people as I can. As I worked on this story, I'm trying to figure out what this book is talking about. And I've learned so much that I never knew was in here before, and that's just this year. This thing is so big, so beautiful, so grand, so immense, so much bigger than I realized, and so much bigger than I probably now realize. But how could you miss an excursion like this one? Color language has to progress, you know. The flying today would be. No? I've been down those roads too. No, because they don't know the way out. They get caught in cul-de-sacs. Well, blind, Box Canyon. No, when you take inventory of the inevitability, if we're going to have courage, then we have to come up against hardship and disappointment. If we're going to be altruistic, then we've got to encounter situations of social inequality. If we're going to have hope, then we have got to live with insecurity and returned uncertainty. If we're going to know what faith really is, then we're going to have to know less than we can believe. We're never going to be able to prove things. If we really have got to fall in love with the truth, then we've got to have a thoroughgoing experience of error and falsehood. people are going to become real idealists, then we must encounter situations that are not good and not beautiful to stimulate our reach for better things. If we're going to find out what it's really like to be loyal, we've got to face the potential of cowardice, betrayal, and default, and look it right in the eye. If we want to be unselfish, then we've got to live all our lives with an animalistic and belligerent self that creates the one's ego expression. And if we want to really find out how true pleasure is, we must know pain as a contrast. Now this to me is not pretending. Okay. Yeah. I've mentally visualized this. I get a lot of this stuff down to very simple symbols to feel it. And I see Ellis Island, where you check in. And if Peter ran the show, that'd be all right with me too. I see a big archway there, a port of entry. And on each of the columns supporting this arch is a bronze tablet, one on each column. On one it says, "No panty waste need apply." On the other one it says, "We don't want any SOBs either." Now that's a nice distinction to go down the middle of that road and avoid either ditch. In talking to executives in business, I portrayed my ideal of a businessman is a man who's wonderfully hard in the head, exquisitely soft in the heart, and has got the two pulling together in harness. This is a very great guy to work for, or to work with. But believe me, if he's soft in the head, he doesn't last very long. And if he's soft in the heart, how can you have any loyalty for him? Hard in the heart. But I find men like this, they are hard-headed and soft-hearted. Yes, they're wise. They're wisely sympathetic. No? They're never soft, but always kind. And sometimes kindness means being tough. I like to associate those two with the pedigree that they give us over on page 291. When you get to Havana, you've got just one aspect of perfection. Perfection of purpose. As far as your purpose is concerned, you have obeyed the Father's command. You use purpose even as I am purpose. Nothing is going to upset you for long. I mean, you really believe. You've tested this thing. But in getting there, and jump over to the next page, to the third paragraph. Long before reaching Havana, these ascendant children of time have learned to feast upon uncertainty, to fatten upon disappointment, to enthuse over apparent defeat, to invigorate in the presence of difficulty, to exhibit indomitable courage in the face of immensity, and to exercise unconquerable faith when confronted with the challenge of the inexplicable. Long since, the battle cry of these pilgrims became, in liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing, is impossible. Now, this again is no theorizing. These people are wearing experiential campaign ribbons for the time they get there. And I got the battle scars of veterans. I've often thought, let me read you about my patron saint in here. If your rancher brotherhood should have become Roman Catholic, I'd adopt this guy as my personal saint. Well, of course it's been. You see, my problem wasn't Lucifer. my problem with the problem of faith and wisdom. The,
your faith and your wisdom.
Yes. It always seemed to me that when you accepted the religion, you tied a bandage around your eyes, and you put out your hands, and you said, Credo, Credo, and the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away, blessed be the name of the Lord, I will trust in God. Stop thinking, you know? Yeah. And even after I had these papers, I accepted them with reservations. This is 755. Until I read this story. And all of a sudden, this seems to be a problem. And I think they could have written dissertation after dissertation about the relationship of faith and wisdom, but the story of Van was worth 100 pages of preaching. Shortly after Satan's inspection, and when the planetary administration was on the eve of the realization of great things on Urantia, one day, midwinter of the northern continent, Caligastius, planetary prince, held a prolonged conference with his associate, Daligastius, after which the latter called the 10 councils of Urantia in session extraordinary. This assembly was opened with the statement that Prince Caligastius was about to proclaim himself absolute sovereign of Urantia and demanded that all administrative groups abdicate by resigning all of their functions and powers into the hands of Daligastius as trustees, pending the reorganization of the planetary government and the subsequent redistribution of these offices of administrative authority. Plus, to consider, there are 100 members of the prince's corporeal staff. They were just me, between human beings and the invisible prince. They could see both ways. These 100 were all ex-mortals, 50 ex-men and 50 ex-women, one from each of the other planets in the local system. Well, since each of 100 other planets, none from this world and no two from any other one. They'd all die, survive, gone through the mansion world, were citizens on Jerusalem, had not yet used for their adjustment. But this could happen, you know, but it happens on the fifth mansion world as average. It could happen much later, and does in any case. And they were selected from among, I presume, a very large number who volunteered to come down here on the Rancho Venture. They had gotten as far as Lucifer, sovereign of the local system. Anything is executive officer. They knew planetary princes, secondarily monitor. They knew nothing beyond the system. The highest authority they had personal dealings with was the system power. They're back down here. They don't have their adjusters with them. The adjusters won't work on a descending mission. Only the connection we have with the adjusters are standing by. They're superhuman beings, because they have an evolution of soul which is post-mortal. We have embryonic souls. Their souls have gone on growing all through the seven mansion world and on Jerusalem for some unknown length of time. So that while they're corporeal, they are really superhuman. This soul is a reality that's got mind and think. The presentation of this astounding demand was followed by the masterly appeal of Van, chairman of the Supreme Council of Coordination. This distinguished administrator and able jurist branded the proposed course of Caligastius as an act bordering on planetary rebellion and appealed to his confreres to abstain from all participation until an appeal could be taken to Lucifer, the system sovereign of Satania, and he won the support of the entire staff. Now, if he had had a bandage around his eyes, he would have simply said, yes, yes, of course, this is his superior decision in regard to him. Accordingly, appeal was taken to Jerusalem, and forthwith came back the orders designating Caligastius as supreme sovereign on your rancher and commanding absolute and unquestioned allegiance to his mandate. Now again, this is backing up from the highest authority that man has had any personal contact with, or that any of these 100 have dealt with. He's checked with the Home Office. And the Home Office is the regional vice president has this authority. Don't argue with it. And it was in reply to this amazing message that the noble Van made his memorable address of 7 hours length. Well, I'm going to listen to the tape of that someday. In which he formally drew his indictment of Delegastia, Telegastia, and Lucifer as standing in contempt of the sovereignty of the universe of Nebadon and the appeal to the Most High's evidentia for support and confirmation.
I think that's very much a higher court.
Yes. Meantime, the system circuits had been severed. Urantia was isolated. Every group of celestial life on the planet found itself suddenly and without warning, isolated, utterly cut off from all outside counsel and insight. Telegastia formally proclaimed Telegastia as god of Urantia and supreme over all. With this proclamation before them, the issues were clearly drawn, and each group drew off by itself and began deliberation, discussions destined eventually to determine the fate of every superhuman personality on the planet. Skip a paragraph. For more than 7 years, this struggle continued, not until every personality concerned had made a final decision, would or did the authorities of Edentia interfere or intervene. Not until then did Van and his loyal associates receive vindication and relief from their prolonged anxiety and intolerable suspense. 7 years.
And I think I'm a problem by another interview.
Now, to me, that simply unlocks the door to religion. I'm not afraid of it. I can realize that religion is not a subtraction. It's an augmentation. But, of course, you've got to redefine religion. That took guts. Chill, cool, dust. As the papers will always say, Van's appeal got to redemption, and they promptly replied to it, vindicated. But the circuit was cut while it was on its way here, and it was marooned in a relay energy transformer for 200,000 years. And it was during the time of the presentation of these papers that they got it out. And this is Van's final technical clearance. Now this is the sort of thing that I think characterizes the universe in which we live. It's not an easy universe. Fair, but not easy. It's kind, but not soft. It's loving, but not mawkish. It engenders happiness, but not content. And I would personally differentiate those words in this way. Contentment is like a cow standing up to his pretty far in high grass, munching his butt, her, munching peacefully and giving milk contentedly. Happiness to me is inseparable from growth. Growth means some change means adjustment means turmoil means pain, and it is the content of pain in the overall of happiness that gives it its sequences and forever separates it from contentment, which has about as much personality appeal. It engenders happiness, but not contentment. And I would personally differentiate those words in this way. Contentment is like a cow standing up to his pretty far in high grass, munching his butt, her, munching peacefully and giving milk contentedly. Happiness to me is inseparable from growth. Growth means some change. Change means adjustment. Adjustment means turmoil. Turmoil means pain. And it is the content of pain in the overall of happiness that gives it its sequences and forever separates it from contentment, which has about as much personality appeal as cold heaven.
And I would agree with you, I think. I wouldn't give you thanks.
No. That's right. Keep in mind also, I find well-adjusted people to be supremely boring.
Yep.
Maladjusted people have tensions that they're trying to resolve, and they're going places in the resolution of those tensions. A little neuroticism, I think, is good for people. And if any of you folks are well adjusted, all I have to say is don't brush it off on me. I'm just going to go on
there. Well, the doctor said not long ago, we don't need more tranquilizers, we need details.
That's right.
I look like
details. Tranquilizers.
Yeah.
Or D-double-O.
D-double-O.
What line?
Well, yeah, I think it's good.
This 7 years of waiting was a time of heart-searching and soul discipline. Such crises in the affairs of the universe demonstrate the tremendous influence of mind as a factor in spiritual truth. Education, training, and experience are factors in most of the vital decisions of all evolutionary moral creatures. But it is entirely possible for the indwelling spirit to make direct contact with the decision-determining powers of the human personality so as to empower the fully consecrated will of the creature to perform amazing acts of loyal devotion to the will and the way of the Father in Paradise. And this is just what occurred in the experience of Amadon, the modified human associate of Van. Amadon was a native here on Earth. Amadon is the outstanding human hero of the Lucifer Rebellion. This male descendant of Andon and Fata was one of the 100 who contributed the plasm, who contributed life plasm to the Prince's staff. And ever since that event, he had been attached to Van as his associate and human assistant. Amadon elected to stand with his chief throughout the long and trying struggle. And it was an inspiring sight to behold this child of the evolutionary races standing unmoved by the sophistries of Dalagaster. While throughout the 7 year struggle, he and his loyal associates resisted with unyielding fortitude all of the deceptive teachings of the brilliant Caligastia. Caligastia, with a maximum of intelligence and a vast experience in universe affairs, went astray, embraced sin. Amadon, with a minimum of intelligence and utterly devoid of universe experience, remained steadfast in the service of the universe and in loyalty to his associates. Van utilized both mind and spirit in a magnificent and effective combination of intellectual determination and spiritual insight, thereby achieving an experiential level of personality realization of the highest attainable order. Mind and spirit, when fully united, are potential for the creation of superhuman values, even Marantia reality. Page 762. At the time of these momentous transactions, I was stationed on intention, and I am still conscious of the exhilaration I experienced as I perused the Salvington broadcast, which told from day to day of the unbelievable steadfastness, the transcendent devotion, and the exquisite loyalty of this one-time, semi-savage, springing from the experiential, from the experimental and original stock of the endonic race. From Edentia, up through Salvington and even on to Eversa, for 7 long years, the first inquiry of all subordinate celestial life regarding the Saturnian rebellion ever and always was, what of Amidon of Eurantia? But he still stands unmoved. And all of this is a beautifully touching and superbly magnificent illumination of the wisdom of the Father's universal plan for mobilizing the core of mortal finality on paradise and for recruiting this vast group of mysterious servants of the future, largely from the common clay of the mortals of ascending possession, just such mortals as the impregnable Amidon. This to me is the yardstick of survival and progression. I think every human being, somewhere along the line, either old piecemeal or maybe in some crisis, faces a decision which is just as challenging to him as these decisions were to man and anybody. I think every recruit has to prove itself. Now, I'm mindful that the decisions would vary, they'd be fair. Jesus never told the Alpheus twins to feed his sheep, he told them to be good fishermen. He told Peter to be a good shepherd. The difference in his admonition to the 12 is a classic example of his statement of the future more as expected than of the student and of the master more of it than of the servant. The thing is, I'm really good at that. But I think it's proportional. I think everybody gets challenged 100%, whatever that may be. Sure, it's your challenge. Sure. The guy that had 5 talents, he doubled them. This is par for the course.
He expected it.
But the vice president that put it in the face of the deposit box gets fired. That's my favorite story in here. Because it meant the most to me when I read it. It answered the one question that I never had anyone answer up before. And I now know that there's no bandage. No, except you think there are.
Sometimes it's harder to do, well, it is harder to do, but you did stand quiet for 7 minutes while stuff is going on. And you're patient and believe you, they're not letting burn from you.
That's murder. Just murder.
I've been through one for a year and a half.
7 months.
I'll tell you, I know. Did I even die to come home and say I've been that time?
I
Crap is coming up, so.
I've got a man.
Boy, it's going to be not, it's a problem. I'm always trying to talk, and I see this is a real perfect one now, but it does work.
I tell you where I think it helps to have humor. You see, if you're going to have that kind of courage, you could also be very paranoid. Now, they think they're right, too.
But they know they're right.
They know they're right. Again, you're walking a crown road that's slippery. And there's the ditch of default, and there's the ditch of ego exaltation on the other side. And neither one of which is particularly desirable. How can you have courage without being a fathead? You know what I mean? To be courageous without being bullheaded. To be willing to choose your conviction without being a paranoid about it. And I believe that the vital ingredient there is humor. Can you stand off and laugh at yourself?
Yeah.
I don't think you can.
Not completely.
You can't be completely, but you can do it partially. And if you're not taking yourself seriously in the process, I'd say this is pretty good evidence that you're not paranoid. If you're taking yourself seriously, I think you're in jeopardy.
You know,
if I had the same, he'd be mine.
Pardon?
Well, we have a break. When do we quit this, Mr. President? He was the Chief Justice of the Voluntary Supreme Court, though. He had a good legal mind. Those aptitudes he had. Van's group, his kin, were approved for the Constellation Authority. And they picked Van as being a real lawyer. Van had a good legal mind. I think that's why he held that commanding post. I think that's so. Well, anyway. I think it was reasoning plus spiritual insight. You know, but he had a soul which had grown to superhuman proportions. Van was more than a human being. Van was a human being as a citizenship based on religion. Let's say it takes 700 years to go to the mansion world. 100 years on each world, that's not unreasonable. I wouldn't get bored in 100 years on the new world. Would you? All right. And then he'd been on Jerusalem for indefinite length of time. Let's say Van was 1,000 years old. Compare any one of us with 1,000 years of experience behind it as compared with ourselves today. And we would be, even if we just lived down here as models, we'd have a lot on the ball that we couldn't possibly have today.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
he was presented with a superhuman challenge, but he was a superhuman being. And I'd say the challenge was proportional to his aptitudes and his capacities. Amadon couldn't have met the challenge without the adjustment. And thank the Lord he had him again. He helped him when he needed help. You can't help you get help when you've earned it. And the most precise description of when they're able to help you and will is given in the story of Andal and Father. It was very important that those first two human beings get away from the ancestral tribe. But nobody could help them until they decided to flee. Now that was their decision. And then the life carriers gave them the one concept they needed, north. They had no map. They decided to flee, and the life carriers supplied them with a sense of the correct direction to flee in.
That will lead away from that.
Right, and you have to exhaust your resources. When you've exhausted your resources, if you merit help, then I'm sure you get it. This I just don't doubt. You may not be conscious of the help, but you get it. Correct. Now here I'm a real believer. If I ever need help and I've been diligent and my gas tank is empty, I'm going to get a full tank of gas or whatever it takes to get out of that pickleness. Now that doesn't mean that I'll be helped out of a physical jam, but out of a spiritual jam, yes.
Sometimes it's an idea.
Well, again, before we get into humans, they promised us this. Just so many words in here. On page 383, last paragraph. Having started out on the way of life everlasting, having accepted the assignment and received your orders to advance, do not fear the dangers of human forgetfulness and mortal inconstancy. Do not be troubled with doubts of failure or by perplexing confusion. Do not falter and question your status and standing, for in every dark hour, at every crossroad in the forward struggle, the spirit of truth will always be saying, search this away. I think human beings are thrown supremely upon their own resources until they've exhausted those resources. But I think the whole universe will help you, if that's what it takes. When you're out of gas and haven't given up.
But your gas tank is empty.
You know you're out of gas. Yeah,
that's right.
It doesn't say this is your way, but this is the way. It might not be a pleasant way. It's the last paragraph in the paper on the universe mother spirit. That's one of the great statements in the picture, too. In every dark hour, at every crossroad in the forward struggle, the spirit of truth will always speak.
Okay.
They use the word every twice and always once. No exception. This is the way. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's good, sir.
Well, I
want
to know how many personalities
I've got to
make
those decisions. Well, there were... I forgotten exactly, but I think there were 24 in the Valentine Commission. And I forgot my little call the 24 in the commission to do cartoon thing. There were, I think, 12 midwares in the commission to do cartoon. That's the memory.
Well, I believe that.
I
never had
thought
of to count them up, and I guess you could.
No, I don't think that takes necessarily into consideration the authorship of the paper, because they could ask anybody to write a paper. The authors of the paper don't necessarily know this information.
I see.
For example, the author of paper number 19. The soul of the Christ might be. The chief of the union started in Netherlands, I'm not sure what he tied up in the rebel territory. But he's having a big show here. He just wrote that paper to me.
You know, he got what's wrong up for 4 months right now.
You turn off the machine? Both of them?
Yeah, he's here.
Page 549.
549.
Mm-hmm. Paragraph 3. When we attempted to magnify our self-importance, if we stopped to contemplate the infinity of the greatness and grandeur of our Maker, our own self-glorification becomes sublimely ridiculous, even verging on humor. One of the functions of humor is to help all of us take ourselves less seriously. Humor is the divine antidote for exaltation of ego. To me, humor is indispensable to a healthy religious life. It says in the paper on the ministering spirits of the super universe that here on earth we grotesquely essay to measure human aptitude. And of course that's how I make my living in part. And I never let myself forget that their opinion of our professional efforts are grotesque. But we make a stab at measuring two things, among many others. One is religious motivation, the other is sense of humor. When I hit a bona fide religious fanatic, he's fanatical not because he's got too much religion, but because his humor score is nowhere nearly as good as his religious one. I tested some very hard-headed businessmen who run a top-flight score in religion and a top-flight score in humor. They take God seriously, but they don't take themselves seriously. And I think if you want to emulate Van or Amadon, then I think you better have a sense of humor. Otherwise, you could close your mind. You could become like... See if I can find it. Jesus and Enid are at the museum in Alexandria. If you recall, the museum means the house of the muses. This is a university, not what we call a museum today. Learned professors here gave daily lectures, and in those times, this was the intellectual center of the Occidental world. Day by day, Jesus interpreted the lectures to Enid. One day during the second week, the young man explained, "Teacher Joshua, you know more than these professors. you should stand up and tell them the great things you've told me. They are befogged by much thinking. I shall speak to my father and have him arrange it. She's a smile saying, you are an admiring pupil, but these teachers are not minded that you and I should instruct them. The pride of unspiritualized learning is a treacherous thing in human experience. The true teacher maintains his intellectual integrity by ever remaining a learner. I think one's only qualification to teach is to admit that one is a student. When you stop being a pupil, you're very quickly through as a teacher. And again, how could you do that without knowing? You see, these professors have lost their sense of humor. But Jesus had. Well, on page 1233, they give us their philosophy of justice in terms of adjudication. Paragraph 3. It says you have to measure up to certain standards, but if through no fault of your own, the accidents of time and the handicaps of material existence prevent your mastering these levels on your native planet, if your intentions and desires are of survival value, then there are issued the decrees of probation extension. You will be afforded additional time in which to prove yourself. If ever there is doubt as to the advisability of advancing the human identity to the nation world, the universe government invariably rule in the personal interests of that individual. They unhesitatingly advance such a soul to the status of a transitional being, while they continue their observations of the emerging Marantia intent and spiritual purpose. Thus, divine justice is certain of achievement, and divine mercy is afforded further opportunity for extending its ministry. The governments of Avantan and Nebadan do not claim absolute perfection for the detailed working of the universal plan of mortal repersonalization, but they do claim to, and actually do, manifest patience, tolerance, understanding, and merciful sympathy. We had rather assume the risk of a system rebellion than to court the hazard of depriving one struggling mortal from any revolutionary world of the eternal joy of pursuing the ascending career. This does not mean that human beings are to enjoy a second opportunity in the face of the rejection of the first, not at all. But it does signify that all real creatures are to experience one true opportunity to make one undoubted, self-conscious, and final choice. The sovereign judges of the universes will not deprive any being of personality status who has not finally and fully made the eternal choice. The soul of man must and will be given full and ample opportunity to reveal its true intent and real purpose. And I... Then they don't say that. I've never talked to such a person. I don't know. I suspect he would be a rather unhappy mortal. And then I think if we turn to page 71. Paragraph 2. The material self has personality and identity, temporal identity. The pre-personal spirit adjuster also has identity, eternal identity. This material personality and this spirit pre-personality are capable of so uniting their creative attributes as to bring into existence the surviving identity of the immortal soul. But first we get our personality from God, we get the adjuster from God. Having thus provided for the growth of the immortal soul, and having liberated man's inner self from the fetters of absolute dependence on antecedent causation, the Father stands aside. Now, man having thus been liberated from the fetters of causation responds, at least as pertains to eternal destiny, and provision having been made for the growth of the immortal self, the soul, it remains for man himself to will the creation, or to inhibit the creation, of this surviving and eternal self, which is his for the future. No other being, source, creator, or agency, in all the wide universe of universes, can interfere to any degree with the absolute sovereignty of the mortal free will as it operates within the realms of choice regarding the eternal destiny of the personality of the choosing mortal. As pertains to eternal survival, God has decreed the sovereignty of the material and mortal will, and that decree is absolute. And then at the bottom of the page, concerning those personalities who are not adjuster in dwell, the attribute of choice liberty is also bestowed by the universal Father, and such persons are likewise embraced in the great circuit of divine love, the personality circuit of the universal Father. God provides for the sovereign choice of all true personalities. No personal creature can be coerced into the eternal adventure. The portal of eternity opens only in response to the free will choice of the free will Son of the God of free will. Here's your charter of liberty, and also the formidable challenge. Because how could you have this liberty without accepting the consequences of its abuse? That's inescapable. You just can't have it and not have it. You either do or don't have it. If you have it, then it's up to you. And if you don't have it, then so help me, you're a piece of machinery. You're a robot. What did you want to talk about?
The
one soul phase, the two soul phase, the three soul phase. They get forward.
I would like for you, and of course I don't even know where this page is, but you are fairly convinced. Give some 16
states. Let's take it up.
Let's take it up right now and dispense with it. In short order.
You find one page and get the other page in this book.
Seven and a half.
I got built and resolved it.
I hope
so.
And
what's the other page, please?
7-Eleven?
You mean it's Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I only have one.
Oh, okay.
You mean it's all
right
on the same page?
Uh-huh.
7-Eleven?
Uh-huh.
Page 7-Eleven?
I might have to go back a little bit, but I don't know what I will. Right here. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the thought adjusters and Andine and Font.
Mm-hmm.
And it says up here that they pray they will be indwelt.
Mm-hmm.
Then down here, it tells about their vague feeling of being something more than mere animals was due to the possession of personality and was augmented by the indwelling presence of the adjusters.
Mm-hmm.
These are
things
that didn't say Andine and Font.
No, I didn't say Andine and Font. When did they get their addresses? Do you see what I mean?
Sometime after the circuit had closed. But probably not very long after.
All archangels pray that these creatures may speedily be endowed with the personal indwelling of the gift of the Spirit of the Universal Father. And then, their vague feelings. Now, read in this paragraph.
Well, it doesn't say when it was augmented, but...
No, but it says that they had thought addresses, probably was the reason that they had quality of mind about some of those numbers.
No, it says that their vague feeling of being something more than mere animals was due to the possession of personality. Now, this has been going on for some time.
Yes.
And was augmented by the indwelling presence of the thought address. It doesn't say when it was augmented. I think they got adjusted fairly early. They didn't have.
But why did they pray for them being well?
Because that's before they had adjusted. And then maybe they got
adjusted. Landmine has appeared on 606
Correct.
So, would you infer they didn't have adjusters when they made their first mall call?
In just a minute. I go back to the first season of paper. Anyway, during the time that they lived with their animal tribe, their feeling of being something more than mere animals was due to the possession of personality and only personality. Because this whole transaction didn't take place until the day after they ran away. Go back to page 709.
Yes, I realize that.
So they got their thought adjusted
later.
It was
after they ran away that...
They got adjusted.
Well, go back to the very first paragraph and read what all this quote is. Like
now take page 709. Last paragraph. At noon the day after the runaway of the twins, there occurred the initial test flash of the universe circuit signal with the planetary reception system. We were all astir. On the third day after the elopement of the twins and before the life care recorded part of their lives, the Nebulan Archangel of initial planetary circuit establishment. Now, 3 days after they ran away, they didn't have thought adjusters. Because that's when this statement was made. At some time thereafter, they got adjusted. And when they got adjusted, that augmented their feeling of being something other than animal. Prior to that time, it was merely the possession of personality. I think the sequence is fairly close to this.
Well, this animated me that they realized they were something more than their ancestors.
That's right.
And they ran away.
That's correct.
And they realized they were something more than their ancestors.
Because
they had
personality
and thought adjustments.
No, just personality.
But they pray up here for them to get a thought adjustment.
Yeah. While they were living with the primeval tribe, I think it was the fact that they were Christians that made them feel different. For example, they communicated more widely. They built better. They amplified. They couldn't always teach their associates their needed presence. And that was personality in action. Then they ran away, and 3 days later, the prayer was issued. And at some time thereafter, on the trek north, I would say, they got it.
There are things that got them to the prayer that seemingly they didn't have. But mind appeared.
Mind doesn't require adjustment.
Before,
they were
in adjustment and well.
That's right. You see, on a planet like ours, you could have personality, have an adjutant from the Holy Spirit, and be a bona fide human being with no thought adjuster at all. You might never get a thought adjuster. Well, I'll check that out for you. I'll check that out for you.
How would you have it? Well, he couldn't worship tonight, or is
there? No, he could worship pretty well. But let's just check that here. We'll get the conditions of the adjuster and dwelling. On a pre-plan of, let's take 1187. Before the times of the pouring out of the Spirit of Truth upon the inhabitants of an evolutionary world, the adjuster's bestowal appears to be determined by many spiritual influences and personality attitudes. We do not fully comprehend the laws governing such bestowals. We do not understand just what determines the release of the adjusters who are volunteered to indwell such evolving minds. That's exactly the condition we have here with all our encounters. But we do observe numerous influences and conditions which appear to be associated with the arrival of the adjuster in such minds prior to the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth, and they are. First, the assignment of personal seraphic guardians. Well, that wasn't the case here. I don't think. That could be wrong. Two, the attainment of the third circle of intellectual achievement. I know that
wasn't. I don't believe that would happen.
Three, upon the making of a supreme decision of unusual spiritual import. I'm not so darn sure that that might not be involved. This decision to flee was a critical decision. Four, the spirit of brotherhood. No. Declaration of intention to do the will of God. No. Influence of the supreme being. Very possibly, the supreme being is concerned with total. And this is the total human race on the planet right now. Yes. I would say, if I had to guess now, I would say it would be item number three and number six could be involved there. I could be suspectful of the supreme being there.
Uh-huh. They're on six. And
that's right. I'm wrong. Right.
I thought they were
feet.
No, they did
feet.
They did
feet. There are worlds where they never feet. The myrtle survived by a different technique. But our world went through in its early stages of development. People survived by two methods, adjuster fusion and spirit fusion. Not always did the adjusters come back. Now, since the soul of Jesus, it's universal adjusted to the soul. The
part of it... I'm not fond of, I don't quite understand. You mean they just fused?
They fused, yeah.
Oh, they fused.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something not wrong with it.
But not all of their children did. Some of them made it by spirit fusion. At this point, I think they're splitting the hairs down to Angstrom units. I think they got their justice pretty soon. But I'm sure that the Archangel wouldn't have been praying needlessly. 3 days after they started, I don't think they had them.
They might have been checking in at
I'm sure by the time that they had to build fire, they had them. When Father gets the bird's nest.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm going to have them in the Archangel's Room. It says here on Jerusalem, both and on the son were accused of their thought of justice, as also were several of their children, including sons had, but the majority of even their immediate descendants only achieved Syracuse. Well, the injustice can't make enough contact with the mind of two criminals. And still, this person merits survival. And so, he wakes up on the first mansion world, but there's no justice there. The local universe mother spirit individualizes a portion of the spirit nature, and that immediately creates what I do. And that mortal then becomes a spiritually dependent, whose destiny is all the difference to me. No, but to be never gets me. Well, some did and some didn't. You're in the dividing line. Well, the justice don't confuse. The people have a justice, but they all move on their spirit moves and rapidly.
Agon doesn't
all. Yeah.
Potential.
That's right.